The Tom Woods Show, episode 2141.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. I'm giving away three free courses from my Liberty Classroom. One of them is ex-Marxist Michael Rechtenwald teaching you about critical theory so you can understand leftism and fight it better, as well as our course on how Alexander Hamilton screwed up America and the history of the conservative and libertarian movements. Check it out at 3freecourses.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. I'm going to run through some of the recent tweets. Not all of them, but a bunch of them from the Libertarian Party's Twitter account. And the reason I'm doing that is because why not? Because the Twitter feed has become much better all of a sudden. How about that? And if you've been following the Tom Woods Show or my newsletter or both, or just been keeping up with events, you know why. It's because the good guys are running things now. And you can see that even in the social media. Now, there are a whole bunch of tweets up there. It would take me 800 episodes to elaborate on all of them. So I'm just picking some tweets from the first day or so, maybe the first day or two, and just commenting on them, elaborating on them, because I'm really happy about these things. Now, as I record this, it is June 2022. And that means that, you know, the summer vacation for kids in traditional school is getting going. It's underway now. But a lot of homeschooling parents are already thinking about the fall. So I do want to remind you that if you have thought about using the self-taught Ron Paul curriculum, make sure you join it through my link. Because in my link, I also give you a subscription to my Liberty Classroom site. And I also send you a free signed book. And I give you a free course that I made just for you, just for people who subscribe to the Ron Paul curriculum through me. So how do you get all these goodies? I mean, you don't want to subscribe and not get the goodies. That would be awful. So you get them by going to ronpaulhomeschool.com. That's mine. And then you get all these goodies that you ain't getting from nobody else. That's for darn sure. So ronpaulhomeschool.com is the link to use for that. Anyway, let's take a look at the Libertarian Party Twitter feed now. You can follow it at LP National. I'll link to that at tomwoods.com/2141. But in particular, and I'm not going to go in any particular order, like, you know, the most edgy or whatever. I'm just looking at what's on my screen. And as I was scrolling, actually, to go back to some of the early ones, because that's really when they were kind of cooking with gas right off the bat, I noticed a retweet they did from the Libertarian Party of Colorado saying it's every individual's right to disregard unjust laws and that this is the basis for jury nullification, that a jury has the right to find not guilty of violation of an unjust law. Northern juries use it to free those who aided escaped slaves. There's nothing the state can do about it. Well, this is a very important idea. And of course, in this day and age, if you so much as breathe a word of this in a courtroom, they'll make sure you never sit on a jury. But when we look back and see what prominent Americans, say in American history, early American history, had to say about it, Americans whose opinions are worth a little bit more than the products of modern American law schools, we find something rather different than we find in an American courtroom today where it's nothing but hysteria about the idea. So here's John Jay. He was the first Chief Justice of the United States. John Jay, in a civil case in 1794, gave the following instructions to the jury. He said, on questions of fact, it is the province of the jury. On questions of law, it is the province of the court to decide. But it must be recognized that by the same law, which recognized this reasonable distribution of jurisdiction, you have nevertheless a right to take upon yourselves to judge of both and to determine the law as well as the fact in controversy. On this and on every other occasion, we have no doubt that you, meaning the jury, will pay that respect which is due to the opinion of the court. For as on the one hand, it is presumed that juries are the best judges of facts, it is on the other hand presumable that the courts are the best judge of the law. But still, both objects are lawfully within your power of decision. And that really is, in a nutshell, what jury nullification is all about. The power of the jury to judge both the law itself and the facts, not just the facts of the matter, and then they're just obligated to do A, B, or C. They can judge both. Because this was considered to be a check, one final check that the public had against the people and institutions that ruled over them, that they could say, we're not going to punish somebody for violating this particular law. Now, sometimes you can use jury nullification for more modest purposes, not because you're saying that the law in itself is inherently unjust, but let's say that it would be wrong to apply it in this case, or it's not really applicable to this case. And so therefore, we will find not guilty. But it can also be used to say, this is a law that maybe a bunch of people on the take may have passed and voted on, but we ordinary people who pay their salaries now get to have our say about it. And so it was thought to be a check from the public against the government. Now, Thomas Jefferson said the same thing. Juries have the right to decide both the fact and the law. He says this in his famous Notes on the State of Virginia. And he also spoke on jury nullification when he said, "Were I called upon to decide whether the people had best be omitted in the legislative or judiciary department, I would say it is better to leave them out of the legislative. The execution of laws is more important than the making of them." So how about that? He thinks it would be better for liberty for the people not to be involved in the legislative process than it would be for them not to be involved in the judicial process in this way of being able to override some law or override the instructions of some judge. Now, the British text that was the most frequently consulted legal dictionary in colonial Virginia was Jacob's Law Dictionary. And it said as follows, "Juries are finable if they are unlawfully dealt with to give their verdict, but they are not finable for giving their verdict contrary to the evidence or against the direction of the court, for the law supposes the jury may have some other evidence than what is given in court, and they may not only find things of their own knowledge, but they go according to their consciences." So we may conclude from that, that the right of jurors to judge matters, quote, according to their consciences, was part of the colonial legacy that the framers, when they guaranteed the right of a jury trial, intended to hand down to future generations of Americans. There's a good book on this, Jury Nullification, The Evolution of a Doctrine, by Clay Conrad. He's kind of a nut, a woke nut, but he did write a good book on jury nullification. And he says, "Colonial Americans had found jury service to be one of their most effective protests against the unjust laws imposed by Parliament, and they had only limited confidence in their own legislature and public officials." And then I might add this quotation from John Adams, "It is not only the juror's right, but his duty to find the verdict according to his own understanding, judgment, and conscience, though," and he means even though, "in opposition to the direction of the court." All right, let's move along to this one. "We support school choice," but then they go beyond that and they say, and by school choice, we don't mean we'd settle at the expansion of charter schools and school vouchers. We mean we won't rest until there is an absolute separation of education and state. Now, that is a bold thing to say. And that's something that I think even a lot of libertarians want to shy away from, because you are hitting one of the third rails of American politics, because the government-run school is like the American church. And you'd better not be a heretic there. Now, incidentally, on this topic, yes, it's true, I have a free ebook, which I will promote to you right now. And it's called Education Without the State. And it'll arm you with a lot of great arguments you can use that almost nobody you're going to be arguing with has ever heard before. And it's going to leave them, well, let's just say, wondering about what the real truth may in fact be. So the book is called Education Without the State. And I have it up. You can get it for nothing at nostateeducation.com. So go get that, nostateeducation.com. For here, there are a million arguments we could make in support of what the new Libertarian Party is saying about this. If the private sector had done this poor of a job educating people, we would never hear the end of it. Never. But remember, this is the American church, so you don't get to hold it up to any actual standards. You just have to shut up and obey. Now, there's a great book, and I interviewed the author, Brian Kaplan, that really, really takes this on. And if I, in fact, you know what? I'm going to write this down. Write this down. Put Brian, I need to get a better, hold on a minute here. Here we go. I got a pen. Hang on a minute. Now, you know, I could have just edited that out, but why not? I get a little authenticity here in the show. As if to emphasize that my household is overrun by daughters, the one pen that I actually have up here is an ice cream cone shape. That's the way it goes. Okay, anyway, I'm going to write this down. Put the Brian Kaplan episode up on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/2141. What Brian shows in that book, among many other things, is that when you look at the actual results of a typical K through 12 education in one of the schools the government sends you to, the results are terrible. They're terrible. Nobody can remember anything. Nobody seems to have learned much of anything. So adults educated in this system cannot answer even half the questions on a test that covers the most basic concepts in science, in government, and in history. That's a fact. They can't even get half of those questions right. And as Brian says, since these are basic, fundamental questions, questions whose answers are necessary to have any kind of significant knowledge of the subject, if you can't answer even half of these, we don't say that you're partway educated any more than we would say that if you knew fewer than half of the letters of the alphabet, that you were partway literate. You are illiterate if you don't know even half the letters. You're illiterate. And likewise, whatever the equivalent word to illiterate would be, you are that in science, government, and history if you can't answer even half of the most basic, fundamental questions in those disciplines. Or let's talk about foreign language instruction in the classroom, in a secondary school setting. Apparently, it's about 1% of respondents say that they feel like they are fluent in that language. 1%. So this is just a complete waste of time. Why are we doing this? And it's not like this system has not existed forever. Everybody just assumes that this must be the way people acquire knowledge. So we're just going to keep on doing it and doing it and doing it. Now, I realize some people will think, but if we don't have that system, then a lot of people are going to wind up uneducated. But we do have the system and a lot of people wind up uneducated. That's kind of the point. Also, the school is not teaching you anything about carving out a niche for yourself or learning how to market yourself or build a portfolio. Let's say if you're a design person or let's say you do services in any variety of areas where you might want to have a body of your work available to be seen. They're not going to coach you on how to do any of that or how to even look for a job, much less be an entrepreneur. So you're not missing out on that, even if you didn't go to any school, because they're not teaching that to you in the government school anyway. But the point is that there are other ways of imagining the provision of education apart from the government school. And this brings to mind a topic I've covered once or twice on the Tom Woods Show, and it involves the work of a guy named James Tooley, T-O-O-L-E-Y. Let me write that down. Put him also at tomwoods.com/2141 for the episode I did with him. I did a couple of episodes with him. And that is his work on low-cost private schools in the developing world. Now, this phenomenon had existed under the radar for many years. Almost nobody knew it was taking place. And what he found was that in some of the poorest parts of the world, private schools under the radar are actually educating more children than the public schools are, and not to mention at lower cost and with better results. Hey folks, Woods here with an important message as Father's Day approaches. You do not want to get your father another predictable gift. Get him something he really wants. Now, what does your dad want? Well, dads want steaks. You won't find a better gift than Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com, type Woods in the search bar, and order the Dad's Want Steaks package. I've been ordering from Omaha Steaks for years and years. I myself got this Dad's Want Steaks package, and it is delicious. And by the way, the Dad's Want Steaks package takes you back to a time before mass inflation and shortages, because for just $99, this limited time package includes 16 mouthwatering entrees he's guaranteed to love, like smoky, tender bacon-wrapped filet mignons, gourmet jumbo franks, and their air-chilled boneless chicken breasts. And for a sweet finish, delicious caramel apple tartlets. I'm getting hungry just thinking about them. And as a special gift for my listeners, when you type Woods in the search bar and order the Dad's Want Steaks package, you'll also get 8 free Omaha Steaks burgers. These burgers are full of bold, beefy flavor made from 100% Omaha Steaks, and now they're bigger than ever at a whopping 6 ounces. I just grilled some the other night, and they are juicy and delicious. So don't wait. Send Dad more than just a gift. Send him an experience he'll love and can share with you. Go to omahasteaks.com and type Woods into the search bar and order the Dad's Want Steaks package. You'll get 16 entrees and 4 desserts plus 8 free Omaha Steaks burgers. That's omahasteaks.com, keyword Woods. Now, here's one I just want to note, but it's not obviously something I need to elaborate on with a lengthy, you know, reference to scholarly sources or anything, but it's a statement of appreciation for people who have been treated badly in the past, despite the enormously significant work they've done. And so I read to you this one. The Libertarian Party is now a home for Ron Paul supporters. We welcome you with open arms. We represent the tradition of Mises and Rothbard and are eternally grateful to Lou Rockwell, Jeff Deist, and everyone at Mises, meaning the Mises Institute, for keeping their legacy alive. We do not throw our heroes under the bus to gain acceptance from the regime. We regard the regime as criminal. Okay, that's the correct way they should be speaking. Absolutely correct. Lou Rockwell, if all he did was create the Mises Institute, yeah, all he did, that's an unbelievable accomplishment. That would be all you would need to say Lou is an amazing benefactor to our cause. If you look at the Mises Institute and what it's done to keep Austrian economics alive, there is nothing else like it. It celebrates its 40th anniversary this year, 2022. As a matter of fact, I'll be speaking at their Supporters Summit event, 40th anniversary Supporters Summit in the Phoenix area in October. So you can check out Mises.org/events to attend that. It's going to be great fun with some very high profile speakers and some interesting excursions and stuff. So we're going to have a lot of fun there. But the Mises Institute helped to form the minds of some of the great Austrian economists we have working in the tradition today, because they went through the Mises Institute's programs, including the Mises University program. That's what I went through in 1993 and then in 1994. And that basically helped to make me who I am today with a couple of ideological detours on the way. But in terms of the economics, I was completely convinced by these programs and it changed the course of my life. It meant that when 2008 came along and there was a big financial crisis, that I was in a position to write a book about it that I would not have been in otherwise. So that's really, really an important thing they've done, is help to mold young minds that are thirsting for knowledge, and help them to get that knowledge. Knowledge they're not going to get in their classrooms, knowledge they're sometimes not going to get even from libertarian organizations. But we're going to go back and read the sources. We're going to read Mises himself. We're going to read those sources and become the best, most knowledgeable expositors of these ideas we possibly can be. So it's great to see this acknowledgement here. If you go to the Mises Institute website, you see that not only do you find probably tens of thousands of articles, but you find the entire print runs of important scholarly journals in our tradition, such as the Journal of Libertarian Studies that's been around since the 1970s, and the Review of Austrian Economics that later became the Quarterly Journal of Austrian Economics, as well as the Libertarian Forum, Left and Right, which is another interesting journal. They have, I don't know how many thousands of hours of courses, lectures by some of the true greats. I mean, by all accounts, some of the true greats of our tradition. They give away, I don't know how many hundreds of books you can get absolutely for free at Mises.org. That's an amazing accomplishment. And of course, the tweet mentioned Murray Rothbard. It's unbelievable to me the extraordinary ingratitude involved in acting as if Rothbard never existed and being willing to tweet and quote and talk about every milquetoast libertarian in history. But here's Rothbard, who was an extraordinary pioneer, I mean, who wrote For a New Liberty, published by Macmillan. Macmillan's kind of an important publisher. And so he introduced libertarianism to America with that book from Macmillan. But not to mention, he wrote a masterwork of Austrian economics, Man, Economy, and State, which Mises urges people to read. We've now dug out even more correspondence from Mises where he describes Rothbard as basically a brilliant genius whose book has got to be studied carefully. it's been said, I think Joe Salerno correctly says, that if it hadn't been for man economy and state, the tradition could very well have died out. Everybody who was at the South Royalton Conference in 1974 in Vermont that met after Hayek won the Nobel Prize, they decided to get together and see what they could do to really give the school a true revival. Everybody in that room at that crucial meeting had been influenced by man economy and state. Now, not to mention, you could go down the list. He did a 5-volume history of colonial America as a spare time project. He edited the Journal of Libertarian Studies and Quarterly Journal, or at that time it was Review of Austrian Economics. He wrote it what was intended to be even longer, but he, in his lifetime, he was able to publish a 2-volume history of economic thought from antiquity up through the 19th century. The chapters on Karl Marx are just astonishingly good. But of course, that's not all. He wrote extremely important scholarly journal articles on issues that are thought to be intractable for libertarians, like air pollution. He kept up an extraordinary correspondence with a great many people he somehow found the ability to keep up with. But he wrote dozens of books, thousands of articles. He wrote about things that had never been written about. He synthesized all these different academic disciplines into one mighty edifice of liberty. And then it's like he's not even there. Like, the more accomplished you are, the less they want to talk about you. It is weird. So it's wonderful to see Rothbard's name in there. Then how about this one? Local governments have full license to nullify immoral, unconstitutional, and egregious acts of the federal government. Make centralized tyranny utterly unenforceable in your own neighborhood. Well, that's a good message. Now, if we're talking about local governments, then nullification is more or less just flat-out civil disobedience, because the tradition of nullification really involves the states as opposed to local governments, whereby the states can refuse to enforce an unconstitutional law. I've talked about that on this program a lot. That, as you can see in my book, Nullification, that is a power that Thomas Jefferson and others thought that the states had, but that's because the states created the federal government. The towns did not create the states. So the same logic doesn't work, but nevertheless, that you could still say you have a moral right to do it, because you always have a moral right to resist tyranny. And I think you're probably going to be more effective at resisting tyranny if you do it as a group. So you might as well do it at the local level, the neighborhood level, the whatever level, everybody working together. So it's not the same, let's say, constitutional arguments that you could make for a town resisting what the federal government is doing, but you could still make good moral arguments. So I am all in favor of that. How about this one? There are many things that separate us from other political parties, but perhaps the most important distinction from the Uniparty in D.C. is that we do not hate you. We love the American people. We oppose the American empire because it is the enemy of the American people. Correct. So they use the word empire. And as I've said, even though the word empire is going to make Henry Kissinger unhappy, we need to use it. We've got to distinguish ourselves from the other parties and not just be the Democrats plus more consistent free trade. No, I don't think that anybody's in the market for that. If anybody is in the market for that, they'll just stay in the Democrats and try to reform the Democrats. And then we have a tweet ridiculing the idea that the U.S. government will or can solve the inflation crisis. And the tweet says that the precise source of the inflation is the Federal Reserve System. Now, you're not going to get that from the Republican Party. The Republican Party will talk all day long about the free market and the entrepreneurial drive of the American people and all this nice-sounding stuff. But when push comes to shove, oh, they might say the Fed made a little mistake here and there, which is an advance over how they used to be 15 years ago and longer, but still not really what needs to be said. We need to say this is the institution that caused it. It's not corporate greed, or we would always have inflation. Wouldn't we? If corporations are supposed to be greedy all the time, why would we have inflation only now? So it can't be that. And it's not because of high oil prices, like the oil prices drive up all the other prices. I've already explained why that's a fallacy. I know you want to think that. You think, well, let's see, if oil goes into everything that we produce, or at least it powers a lot of what gets produced, a lot of the production of stuff, then it must drive up all other prices. But the thing is, you have a budget that's only X dollars a month. You have a budget of X dollars a month as a consumer, right? If you're a conscientious person who does budgeting, your budget is X dollars a month. And if your gas prices go up a bit, that just means that your budget of X Now, a larger portion of the X has to go to gas. That means a lower portion can go to other things. So those other things now have less spending on them, and those other things, therefore, their prices will tend to fall. So it would just be a wash. The gas prices would go up and other things would fall. But that's not what's happening. That's not what's happening. If the problem were that it was cost push, it was being driven by oil, then this is what we would see. We would see the oil be going up, but other things would go down. But if everything's going up, well, you only have a budget of X. Where'd you get the extra money to both buy the more expensive gas and keep up your purchases of other things? Where'd you get that extra money? Your budget is X. So the only way that all the prices can go up, given that everybody has a limited amount of money, is if the amount of money goes up. And so what is the institution in American society that can bring that about? The Federal Reserve System. So good for the Libertarian Party for talking about it, talking about the Federal Reserve System and identifying it not as a nuisance that occasionally bumbles around and does the wrong thing, but that is corrupt at its core. Or how about this? The world is full of blood-soaked, war-making tyrants that must be stopped, say U.S. politicians who shamelessly backed their own wars of aggression overseas. Following in the tradition of Ron Paul and Harry Brown, we oppose their hypocrisy and promote military non-intervention. Not too bad. Not too bad. And then for the first time ever, from what I understand, I'm prepared to be proven wrong on this, but my understanding is this is the first acknowledgement by the Libertarian Party of the Free State Project. I could be wrong. Again, I am prepared to be contradicted on this, but this is what I've been told. We are the National Libertarian Party, so we would like to see liberty for the entire United States. But if you believe that libertarian concentration is the way, then nobody's doing it better than the fine folks in New Hampshire with the Free State Project. And of course, we've talked a lot about the Free State Project on this program too, to bring a lot of people who are all committed to doing something and changing things into one place and having that concentrated effort bear fruit. Well, that's a great approach too. I mean, there's no one way to do this. Might as well try everything there is and encourage each other and see what works. And so now we're seeing that from the Libertarian Party, and that's also encouraging. So in general, these are all good signs. All right, folks, as we wrap up, I know a lot of people, especially in this day and age, are thinking, no way am I going to college, or no way are my kids going to college. But I know that there are others of you out there, perhaps more quiet, who are saying, well, yeah, I don't like it either, but I still feel like for this particular field, they will need to go to college. Then I want to refer you to a site where you will actually be talking to a Tom Woods Show listener, and that's nodebtcollege.com, nodebtcollege.com. And on that site, you will find out all kinds of ways to save for your education, and in particular, to get scholarship money. When you get there, you can get a free scholarship guide. It's going to teach you how to put together a successful scholarship application. It's a really valuable site. So check it out, nodebtcollege.com. And remember, if you are thinking of starting a website, let me help you get some eyeballs on it. All you got to do is get your hosting, which you need anyway, through my link, and I'll promote your site, post it on my website. That'll give you some SEO juice. I'll send you some free tutorials, get you in my private group if you need any help. I got great bonuses for you. And it's just when you get something, you have to get anyway. So get the details on that. If you have an interest in that, in my helping you, you can find out all the details at tomwoods.com/publicity. I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.